With Pennsylvania interviewers, he seemed to let down his guard a little bit more. He seemed to talk knowingly about Pennsylvania to other Pennsylvanians, as if this were a private club that only Pennsylvanians could figure out, or, you know, it took a member to really understand him. And I think that's one of the main things that comes across, is just how much Berks County really meant to Updike and helped to shape him as a writer that's known and celebrated internationally.
Interestingly enough, this is a man who did not like to give interviews, apparently.
No, he hated it. In fact, I still remember a time I had invited him on behalf of the selection committee for the Conk Republic Prize in Key West to come down to Key West and accept that prize. And then the festival director decided he wanted to have an interview with Updike published in the festival program and asked me to do it. And when I called Updike, and I will never forget his response, it was a very curt, "Well, this is expanding." And he says, "Now I have to do an interview?" And I said, "Nope, nope, you don't have to." I said, "Well, you're already on the phone." And I said, "That's okay, I can hang up." And he says, "I've already been interrupted." And he said, "Let's proceed." So he told me later, after I got to know him better, he said that interviews always make him feel as if he has dirt under his fingernails.
Wow.
And he hated the way that with interviews, the same weight would be applied by scholars or readers to an item that he just tossed off the top of his head at the moment.
Well, that is a danger when you give an interview.
He gave so many, I think, for two reasons. The first is that he has been called America's Man of Letters by any number of publications. Unlike his colleagues who were strictly in the creative vein, he worked in many different veins himself, including criticism. He was, in fact, an important literary critic. And he feels, or felt rather, an obligation to respond when newspapers asked him to talk about American culture, the state of the arts, the state of literature in America, that a writer was the only true way that anyone could find the truth, you know, in a world where there were so many people who were speaking things that were less than the truth. He thought that writers, especially, were one source of truthfulness. The other reason I think he gave interviews is that he realized that scholars and their attention and whatever attention he's given in colleges and high schools in the future will in large part determine how he's regarded, will determine his legacy. And he knew this. And so he was absolutely cooperative with every scholar that I've ever talked to. Everyone has the same story, gracious, very giving. He would share everything with you.
I wanted to ask you about that, because it sounds like he had a bit of a gruff exterior, but that might have been a facade. Then underneath, he actually was quite gracious.
Oh, he was very gracious. In fact, everyone who ever interviewed him, gracious is the first adjective that pops out of their mouths.
What did you learn from these interviews that perhaps gave you a different insight into the writer and the man?
Some of my favorite interviews from this collection, I approached it differently. These are not all interviews per se. They're not all Q&As. They're not all even articles that have a huge amount of quotes from Updike. Some of them are simply reflective of the relationship that Updike had with his hometown. There's an editorial, for example, about Updike winning a Pulitzer Prize. And it really tells the story of how Berks County felt about Updike, their native son.
And how did they feel about him?
And here's where his honesty comes out. A local interviewer named Dorothy Lehman Hoare, she got him to basically talk about the fact that some people just want him to keep writing Pennsylvania Dutch stories. They want to just read themselves and see themselves in his work and feel pride in their local area, whereas Updike would go off into different territory. He'd do couples, you know, about wife swapping that got him on the cover of Time magazine. And that was horrifying to the locals who, when he published a satire on American consumerism and African power in a novel called The Coup, locals were coming in asking a bookseller for the coop, you know, thinking it was something must have it to do with chickens because, you know, the Updikes had a chicken coop on their yard.
We're talking with Dr. James Plath of Illinois Wesleyan University. He's got a new book out about interviews from Pennsylvania with John Updike. Pennsylvania was Updike's home state.
I think my favorite interview slash article in the whole collection isn't one with Updike at all. It's one that features his parents. And his parents were quoted very seldom in newspapers. And so it was a real treat for me to read what his father, Wesley, who was famously a high school math teacher, had to say about his son, or what his mother, who was also a writer, who was also published in The New Yorker, albeit after John paved the way. And I think that it will probably be just as interesting to Updike fans.
What was it that they said that struck you?
Linda was portrayed by a lot of biographers and a lot of critics as someone who was just really pushing Updike and pushing and possibly jealous, as was Hemingway's mother, of his success. But I don't think you see the jealousy as much in this interview locally as you see the pride. You also see the manipulation going on behind the scenes in some of these interviews and articles. There's another article where somebody in the Reading Times or Reading Eagle writes a column, an editorial column, slamming Updike for not granting an interview. Meanwhile, you get an exchange where one of Updike's childhood friends, a classmate from the 1950 class of Shillington High School, comes to his defense and says, why should he? He said, when Ted Williams it was at his final at-bat and they wanted a curtain call, you know, he didn't feel obligated. You know, so why should Updike feel obligated to respond every time he publishes a book to give an exclusive interview to the local paper?
Is there a quote that you could even paraphrase from one of the interviews that really struck you?
I'm always struck by things that make me smile or that give me a fuller sense of a man or a woman that I'm writing about or researching. And again, this one comes from somebody besides Updike, David Cheshire, who did a documentary for the BBC. He got in the same car as Updike, and they traveled to Pennsylvania together. And he writes, Updike claims that his Pennsylvania accent returns every time he crosses the Delaware, but this could not be verified as his mouth was crammed with Pennsylvania Dutch pretzels, promptly bought and urgently consumed the moment we crossed the state line.
I don't know what a Pennsylvania accent sounds like, do you?
I do, having been there so often, working on the Updike house, but I couldn't duplicate it.
Okay. Now, literature changed a lot after the years that many of Updike's books and stories were published. And in many ways, Updike is a traditional novelist. There's a plot, there's character development. How do you think he will go down in the pantheon of American letters?
I think there's a new volume coming out called Understanding John Updike in the series that's been released by the University of South Carolina. And Fred Svoboda, who is the scholar who put together that volume, said that he personally saw Updike as this century's William Dean Howells.
Meaning?
Meaning it's someone who wrote novels of manners, describing life in that particular century, writing a prolific amount and a very competent amount of fiction and body of work, but nothing that is cutting edge. I personally would beg to differ.
Why is that?
I think that Updike is far more experimental than he gets credit for. Rabbit Run, he wrote in response to Jack Kerouac's On the Road, trying to engage Kerouac in a dialogue, a literary dialogue, novel to novel, you know, mano y mano, that kind of thing. And I think it's fascinating that he also saw that novel as something that was cinematic. And so he deliberately wrote it in the present tense. He experimented with sex in that novel and was far more graphic in his descriptions of sex, I think, than even Henry Miller or Vladimir Nabokov. I think he was far more energetic in the way that he pursued connections to American literature. For example, his so-called Scarlet Letter trilogy. There have been novels that attempted to engage other books in the past in America's history, America's literary history, but none so fully as he did in the Scarlet Letter trilogy, in which he explored the three characters of Nathaniel Hawthorne's Scarlet Letter from three different points of view. And I thought that was astounding. Same thing with The Coup, using his experience as a Fulbright scholar traveling around Africa to comment on American consumerism, because it never struck him that much until then.
Well, it makes you want to run right out and get all of Updike's books out of the library, and certainly get your book. We've been talking with Dr. James Plath of Illinois Wesleyan University. Thanks a lot for coming in and talking about John Updike.
You bet.
I'm Judy Valente.